there's no doubt that Australia has always produced some exceptional wines. But in my opinion, when it comes to red wine, Australia can hold its own with the absolute best of them. Finally, Australian wines have received some much-deserved recognition with the announcement that a winery in the Barossa Valley has beaten 450 other wines from around the world to take out the award for the best Shiraz in the world at the International Wine and Spirit Competition in London. The wine is called the Everest. The winery is Chateau Tanunda, and the owner, John Geber, joins us live. John, the 2005 vintage of the Everest, what makes it so good?
Stephen, you know, you mentioned Australian wines being great, and they are. And of course, the Earth and the Barossa, we've known that for 165 years as one of the great, great vineyard areas in the world. And we just happen to have some very, very old vines there. It's made, this 205 Everest has been made using the really old traditional winemaking, which we used to have all along, things like basket pressing, open fermentation, not too much oak wine that you can drink, but the alcohol is acceptable at 14% rather than rockstar wines at 16, 17. Just a wine that is just gracious, just elegant. There, it's at you. It's a good old Australian fruit all the way up front, but it's not overwhelming like a mouthful of bubblegum. And, you know, there's been a lot of criticism about Australian wines overseas. And here's a wine that's suddenly gone against the trend, and it's sort of made a elegance and a fruit appreciation of wine that people can love without being overly zonked by too much alcohol, because alcohol doesn't give you flavor. Actually, alcohol is a misnomer for flavor. Flavor on its own can be special, and I think Australian winemaking has certainly come of age as we've sort of gone into this sort of direction and made really great, elegant wines. And, you know, to beat the best in France for Shiraz is a big one. So, you know, guys going into this International Wine and Spirits Competition in London, which is the biggest show in the world and recognised as such, as a big accolade for Australia.
You mentioned old production methods. I've had a little bit to do with wine, grape growing, not wine making, so to speak. But old vines, so it's hand harvested, no machine harvesting?
Hand harvested, you know, dry grown vines, so they haven't got drip irrigation on them. The Everest, they're absolutely very, very old. The Grenache, that's also just, strangely enough, just won the best single vineyard wine, I haven't told you that, in the world as well, is more than 100 years old. There were about 230, we think, vines in the area, 176 left, so they just struggle away through life. Sometimes they yield a lot, sometimes they yield nothing, but it's less than, you know, 800 kilos for an acre, and that's very, very low, so.
So it certainly is very old-fashioned. And do you think that important in the winemaking process? I know that in my experience, a lot of modern techniques have come into both the growing of grapes and the manufacture of wine. Is the old way still the best way?
Look, you know, we've tried everything. We have tried everything. We've gone from extremely new-age technology through to semi-technology, all the way back to minimalistic approach. Minimalism, you let the wines do it, you let the earth grow what it's growing, you use wild yeast, you don't really interrupt when you're making the wine, you don't fiddle with it, you let the acids and the pHs do what they're supposed to do. When you do that, I mean, whichever way we look at it, it's timely, it's inefficient in winemaking terms of going around in wineries. The bean counters will say you're very inefficient, but it just somehow makes wine that can go the distance. They last much longer. We know that for a fact. Open fermented wines, the alcohol is lower. It just creates something. The wild yeast, without putting modern yeast in, you know, adding yeast, they just create a wine that is, I guess, if you look at the best piece of bread you've ever eaten, a real beautiful doughy bread that's, you know, had oven baked and it's had time spent on it. Have that versus a modern bread that you have in a supermarket. That is the difference.
Yeah.
It's, and the people can taste it. They can taste it just like that.
It certainly sounds more like art than business. You mentioned that you won the award for the Grenache. Grenache, up until recently, was a fairly unfashionable grape variety. What's prompted the resurgence?
Australia has some of the oldest Grenache in the world. Because it never hit with the phylloxera epidemic that happened in Europe late 1870s to 1890s. That was a little bug that killed all the vines. So Australia's had wonderful old Grenache. We in the Barossa are blessed. We've got some magnificent old Grenache. Grenache is regarded as, in the south of France, Chateau Neuf de Pape being one of the key sort of examples, Gigondas, Sablé, Cigare, Vacherin, those wonderful places, Avignon, the south of France, are known as, it's a more like animally herbal type wine, soft, gentle, a little bit thinner, not as heavy and as direct in fruit, but very savory and gives you wonderful lengths. Now, Shiraz, on the other hand, is very in-your-face. Fruit, bang, here I am, I'm at you. It's slightly fruit-sweet and gives a direct perception of a mouthful of fruit at you. Grenache is exactly the opposite. It almost is savory. It, you know, attacks you from behind. You're not quite sure what's going on, and suddenly you've got this wonderful flavor going through. So I think the world is always looking for older varieties that have done well. Grenache has been around and is regarded in continental Europe as one of the great varieties, just not so much appreciated. So when an Aussie gets up and wins the best single vineyard red wine in the world for the year 2010, and it happens to be a Grenache out of Australia, that in itself is an incredible accolade. It just puts us on the world scene.
It's extraordinary. Now, you picked up two trophies and a whole bunch of gold medals as well, but across the board, Australian wines did well this year, didn't they?
They've done exceptionally well. Absolutely exceptionally well. I read the count this morning. I wasn't quite sure. I think it was we did, out of 6,800, Australia put 578 medals. So even though Australia has been under the gun for making, you know, on the one hand, wines that have been very associated with, you know, the zoo full of animals, as they call it in Europe, you know, yellowtails, kangaroo ridges, those sort of wines,
yep,
which are a good beverage. And on the other hand, we had all these rock stars that were far too much in alcohol and really Parker Point-driven wine. Right now, what we're doing is coming back to our roots of wines that are great, have tremendous value, roundness, wines that you can drink, that you don't have to eat, wines that have character. You know, they're not a mouthful of wood. Wood and oak can disguise a lot of things in wine. So we've suddenly, you know, Australia's gone through this whole thing of new technology. Now we're getting back to our roots of the real wines. And I'm thinking of the wines like Yulumba and those guys in the 1990s, Peter Lehman, the old Penfolds, that were wines of absolute incredible, unique character and intrinsic value, which made Australia famous. 20 years later, we're going back to make the same things again.
Yeah, it's amazing how we learn from our past, but sometimes ignore it. Red wines, clearly we do well. What about white wines and sparkling wines? How do we do there?
Sparkling wines, we have a problem. I think Australia makes some of the greatest sparkling wines in the world, but we're not allowed to call them champagne.
Yeah, yep.
And that is an immediate block, because champagne has done such a magnificent marketing job all over the world that they really corner that market. And then you get to the lighter varieties like the Italians with Proseccos. Mm. And they tended to brand name the word champagne or Prosecco. Sparkling hasn't really ever done it. But if we have a look at the Semillons of Australia, we've done exceptionally well, always have. Rieslings have done very, very well. You know, Australia, again, has some of the great oldest Riesling. At Chateau Tinunda, Stephen, I think your dad used to work there or deliver stuff there.
We actually used to carry wine for Chateau Tinunda. That's right, yeah.
Wow, man. Well, on the Chateau, the one block of Riesling was planted in 1929 in the Great Depression, and it makes some of the most stunning Rieslings in the world. Australia has always done very well with Rieslings on the International Wine Show, but Riesling isn't a grape that too many drink anymore, because it went out of favor. It became commercialized in Germany. It became very, very sweet. People couldn't handle it. Now we're going back 50 years to the drier Riesling styles of Australia. That means something, but the market's not there. Chardonnay, Australia has always been brilliant at Chardonnay. We are the greatest Chardonnay nation in the world, unequivocally, full stop, nobody near us. However, we went through the same thing. We started to produce too much. We added oak. We started to lose the great full flavor, tropical fruit, butterscotchy flavors of Chardonnay, and so I've lost a little bit. But we're coming back, Stephen. Australia will be back. We'll be back.
It's great to hear, John. And people like you at the forefront, I'm sure we'll do well. How important is a prize like this to your business?
It's the difference between our phone. We had, I believe, one article came through the media today in The Australian. A more or less okay article, a very good article, but just not a big splash or anything. And it's been, our phone hasn't stopped ringing all day. And I mean, all day. We had people calling from Europe who've seen the awards on the internet or whatever. We've had wine geeks from all over the world calling. It's just been absolutely incredible. I mean, so what does it do for your business? It puts you on the world stage. Chateau Tenenda should have always been on the world stage. It just got lost in over the last 120 years and the last 40 years. We back.
Absolutely. It's good to hear. Just quickly, we've been talking a fair bit over the last couple of days about the situation with the Murray-Darling Basin Authority and water. Is that having any impact on you guys in the Barossa?
It is. It is. And, you know, water is either for you or against you. The issue with water, Stephen, and such a serious one, I believe that too much water is a bad thing because you can put it on your vines and you can up your yields and you overproduce very quickly and it becomes a commercial business. So too much water is a problem. Too little water is a massive problem, but that's Mother Nature taking over. A little bit of water in between is very good. So in many ways, I actually encourage from a winemaker's perspective that we should have a better balance. There's no doubt that we were absolutely extravagant with our water in Australia on vines for the last 20 years. There's no doubt at all. Too much planting in the wrong places, given water to areas where grapes should never have been grown in the first place. Grape is a hardy product. It needs to fight. That's when it yields its best. It needs to hang in there and be persistent year after year and live with the soils and handle its reserves and, you know, correct itself. When you splash tons of water on it, you know, hectolitres of water, that creates a whole new cycle of wine becoming a little bit different. And we have in Australia, even though water is a scarce resource, we've squandered it a little bit because we didn't understand it enough. So in a way, from my point of view, and I might be a lonely wolf out there, but been there many times in my life, and that is to say, hey guys, maybe it's a good thing that, you know, you let grapes grow where they're supposed to. You let the right amount of water on it. You don't overdo it. It's not a commercial venture of an engineering company putting out screws. It's about heart and passion, and that's what wine and water, and we've got to live with nature, and I think it's important for Australia.
Absolutely. Where can Sydney ciders pick up a bottle of the Everest?
They're going to have to call the winery or just call Chateau Tenenda or go on the internet at www.chateautenenda.com. They can get it there. There are a very few shops in Sydney that have it right now because, Stephen, we haven't released it. We've done something that other wineries aren't doing. We held this wine for 5 years before we released it. So we let it out to the London Wine Show and Wishgert ends up the best Shiraz in the world. So that in itself is a great story. So they're going to have to contact the winery and we'll get some to them on a direct basis.
Okay, fair enough. It sounds great. John, congratulations. It's always good to see Aussies do well on the world stage. And as a wine connoisseur, it's fantastic to see a good Australian red wine get up. Thanks for joining us on Backlash.
Thanks, Stephen, and you've got a great show. Thanks very much.
That was John Geber, the owner of Chateau Tenenda, who was just awarded the trophy for the best Shiraz in the world at the recent International Wine and Spirit Competition in London, and also won the award for the best single block wine for his Grenache, which up until recently was a fairly unfashionable wine.